Before I start, I want to apologize to my mother. There are a lot of parts in this story where she is depicted accurately. And no one deserves that. So a pool story. Not the pool. Not that place that you had to ride your bike 20 minutes to get to, that was, you know, filled with limbs and screams and the bodily fluids of persons unknown. We didn't know the persons, but you know the fluid. No, this was my pool. A pool of one's own. The American dream pool. You know, swimming pools, movie stars. I guess I'm not the oldest person here. So it was 1972. To give you a little perspective, the difference in time between now and 1972 is equivalent from the distance between 1972 and World War I. And here I stand before you, upright. But in 1972, I was 13 years old, and I was upright pretty much all of the time. And all I really wanted was a swimming pool and a girl to put in it. Step one, get a girl to put in it. No, wait, get a pool. So I'm just talking about those, like, in-ground pools, you know, with shaped like martini glasses and poodles and stuff. This wasn't Guilford. I grew up in Buffalo Grove, which was a frontier suburb of Chicago. Three doors down, my street ended in a cornfield. The kind of pool we're talking about was just a ring of galvanized steel with a large baby blue PVC diaper. And I wanted one so much. And everyone else already had one. Well, two people. Across the street, the Ronas had this sort of 3 foot deep, kind of squatty pool. It was an infinity pool, which means it was shaped like a peanut. A little joke for you math fans out there. Next door to that was the Roberts house, and they didn't have a pool in the backyard, but they had something equally fantastic, which is they had a pop-up camper that was permanently popped up, and legend had it, teenage shenanigans went on there. Next door, we had the Van Dykes. The Van Dykes were the only Protestants in our subdivision. And they liked to play that old suburban game that we like to call keeping up with the Van Dykes, because they were the only ones playing. They had an above-ground pool, which they had managed to tuck into a hillside, which made it arguably an in-ground pool. And we were afraid of Mr. Rona, so we had to suck up to the Van Dykes for about a year and a half to use their pool until my mother finally relented. And that was pretty much because my father loathed the Van Dykes. As I remember it, there was a giant sort of circus-like canopy, and there were like pool models as far as my little delirious eyes could see, and we settled on a pool that had a deck, and it was 6 inches deeper than the Van Dykes. And then I heard the number 525, and I was like, I am never getting a pool, and ipso facto, I'm never getting a girl to put in it. You have to understand, in 1972, for $525, you could buy 2,100 Twinkies. If my mother sent me to the store with $525, I could get her 26,000 cigarettes. So in 1972, for $525, you could buy diabetes or lung cancer. And I couldn't imagine my mother spending that kind of money on something fun. I mean, she didn't like spending money on anything. She was the kind of mother who, when it was pork chop night, we would always be one chop short. And she would be like, oh, I'm not hungry. I'll just have a pack of cigarettes. But we got the pool because of goddamn Van Dykes. And my father put up the pool, and he didn't swear back then, so that added a degree of difficulty. And all we had to do was add water, which took 4 days, and chlorine. I mean, because back then, all of your holes and creases had to be spick and span, and that went for anything that came in contact with him. So we put copious amounts of chlorine in the pool. If you jumped in the pool and you didn't cough, there wasn't enough chlorine. You had to feel the clean. And afterwards, you had to put on calamine lotion. And so it came a few days later, me and the boys, that would be Pete, our leader, who we called Sarge. We did. And Greg, who was the pretty one, we called Speed. And John, who was kind of a weasel, but we called him something else. And Ralph, who we called Ralph, and I was affectionately known as Fats. That was the weasel's idea. But I didn't care, because on this particular day, we had had an extended dip in my 6-inch deeper pool, and we were out sunning ourselves, watching, you know, rivulets of cool pool water stream down the Van Dykes driveway, you know, pulling up blacktop with it. And we played pee games, you know, pee races, which are what you're thinking. And they were hilarious. And also hilarious was I put my arms together like this. And so I pushed out the baby fat on my chest, making boobs. And at that moment, my mother stepped out on the stoop next door. And she called over and inquired, "What's the matter, Larry? You want me to buy you a bra?" It's interesting, the things that you remember, like the little moments, you know. I probably remember that because it was so funny. Step two, get a girl. By August, I had managed to acquire a provisional girl. Wynne King. I mean, isn't that an excellent name? I wish I had made it up, but I didn't. Wynne was... I don't want to go into the details, but I did have to go through them to prepare this story, and they were wonderful details. I wouldn't say that I loved Wynne King, but I did say it a lot back then. And to prove my verbal love, I had had a ring custom shoplifted from Kmart. It was this huge golden thing, and it had an old English letter on it that could have possibly been an L. And it was so big that if Wynne could get her hand around it, she could wear it as a bracelet. But instead, she put it on her ring finger and secured it with an entire skein of lime green yarn. And, you know, so I could say, "That's my girl," about 300 yards that way. And I decided that the next step in our relationship is that I needed to see Wynne King in the least amount of clothes possible. And so, bing, pool party. And my mother went for it. We invited Wynne and her best friend, Sherry Bloom, and my new best friend, Ray Mickel, and some extras. I put out a whole spread, bugles, screaming yellow zonkers, space food sticks. None of that, ironically. For drinks, we had Goofy Grape because Kool-Aid wasn't cool anymore. And so I had my girl, and I had my pool, and I had my girl in that pool. And it was every bit as life-affirming as I thought it would be. We would go to the opposite sides of the pool, and then we would swim along the bottom and reach in the middle, and we would kiss, and then we would swirl up to the surface. And when we broke through the surface, we would laugh and cough. At some point during the pool party, my mother came out to see what was this thing called fun, and she decided to participate. And so she said, "Hey, why isn't everybody dancing?" She didn't dance that badly. The problem was there wasn't any music playing. It got late, and the mosquitoes were nigh. And so we got out, and we toweled ourselves off, and Wynn King went across the street to the Roberts camper with Ray Mickle. I'll try to paint you a tableau. It was dusk, and the stars were out. You could see so many stars back then. And I looked up, and I saw coming toward me Sherry Blum. And without a word, she put this monstrous ring in my hand, walked away. I remember bringing the ring up to my face. I think I was going to kiss it. I don't know what. The yarn was still wet. It smelled like a spick and span despair. I didn't go back in that pool until the next day. I hear Wynn King became a professional bowler. Not a joke. I don't know what happened to Ray Mickle. He'd probably be hard to Google, because I'm sure he changed that last name. I would have. The pool died a long time ago. But it lives on in my heart and my lungs.